Welcome to Fresh Takes on Tech. I'm your host, Vani Estes, Vice President of Innovation for the International Fresh Produce Association. On the podcast, we get to hear from people that are shaping the produce industry with solutions to our biggest problems. Join me as we uncover the opportunities and advancements shaping the future of produce through a tech lens. Welcome to Fresh Takes on Tech, where insight meets innovation.
I'm so happy to be back on the air. This season, we are focusing on climate smart agriculture. We have two experts on the topic today. Max Teplitsky, Chief Science Officer at International Fresh Produce Association, and Drew Zabrocki, who is an expert in many things and advisor to the program. But first, and I didn't warn these guys about this, do you know what, besides the two of you, is super special about this episode?
You.
Okay. It's not me. It's not Max. It's not Drew. What's super special about this episode?
I think this is a milestone, Vani.
I think it is. So this is our 100th episode of Fresh Takes on Tech. So I'm very excited that we have kept the podcast going and that we still have you listeners out there and that we've made it to 100. That is quite a milestone.
You know, you always talk about the graveyard of podcasts that started during COVID. I'm so glad that we're not there yet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I forget all the percentages, but it's like very few make it to 20. And the reason is that people pick topics and there's just not that much to say about the topic. And so after 20 episodes, you've kind of said all you can say about refinishing furniture. But I think the thing that's so great about our industry and our topics is that we will never run out of technology topics in the produce industry. We will never run out. So, okay, just that little sidebar. And now back to our regularly scheduled show. So this season, we will have 7 episodes about climate smart agriculture. And we'll touch on climate smart agriculture commodities grant from the USDA and other facets of climate smart ag. So I wanted to start off the season giving an overview of the climate smart program at IFPA, A Vibrant Future. This project took a ton of work to put together. And of course, like every project like this, has dozens of partners and collaborators. Max and Drew are here to give us an overview of the program and where we are to date. So, Max, let's start with you explaining the program and talk to us about the projected outcomes and the benefits.
Yeah, thank you, Vani, for asking that. And maybe I'll go a little bit further than just writing the proposal, because back in the day, during the transition to this current administration, it was clear that they were going to focus on climate. Climate was going to be a priority. And a group of trade associations and nonprofits working in the environmental space got together and we started thinking, well, what can we do? What can we offer to this administration as an opportunity to think about investing in climate smart agriculture? Do we look at the European model where they are very top-down directive about everything environment? Or do we think about voluntary-based, incentive-based opportunities for the growers to participate? And that's where the group landed. And we developed a blueprint. We've shared it with many, many different stakeholders. And eventually it made it all the way to administration. And that's how this idea for climate smart pilots was born. And, you know, that's the power of the trade associations and NGOs working together, try to negotiate something that's workable. Fast forward a few months after that, this $3 billion program was born. And IFP was one of many associations that competed for funding, and you know, we're lucky to get it. So our angle in this was that, unlike broadacre row crops that had no-till conservation tillage available to them for decades, specialty crops don't have that available to them broadly. What climate smart practices can our growers implement that make sense economically? And on the other hand, how can they benefit from utilizing these climate smart practices as they market their commodities? And clearly, soil health is so critical to growth of every crop. And our growers already investing in soil health, making sure that they're not, you know, just taking, but reinvesting in the production, both the organic matter and fertilizers and thinking about the crop rotations, but how to standardize it, how to make it scalable. I think that's the challenge, and that's what we're focusing on. And then Drew will talk about data, because that's a component of this conversation, because it's not enough to do cover crops or to apply compost, but how do we gather data? How do we make sure that data is governed appropriately? And how do we recover the value of data? And where does the value of data belong on the supply chain continuum?
Great. Thanks for that overview. We can dig more into it in a minute, but let's switch to Drew and talk about data. So can you explain the data collection and analytics part of the program?
All the exciting things to talk about, data, right? There's so much of it on the farm these days. You know, I was really happy to be invited to participate in the program for some of the reasons Max just highlighted. This is very much from the farm gate forward perspective of delivering value and understanding how that value can be shared amongst the supply chain partners. And we know that much of that is understood through a lens of data and insights, not just more spreadsheets and more data points, but rather how those data correlate to one another and the insights that can be derived to improve outcomes. And for growers specifically, you know, how can we provide value for participating beyond just the academic and the research value, but actually provide value on the farm in the moment for growers that are out there doing the work day in, day out, collecting information. So when we think about that dynamic, oftentimes programs like this are just peppering growers with more forms, more spreadsheets, more data, more, and hey, you have nothing better to do. They feel like a paperwork farmer all of a sudden. And we wanted to make sure that when we approached it at this program, we were really being mindful of how we can connect and integrate with the systems that farmers already use, right? Nobody wants to enter information more than once. Mm-hmm. We also found that by taking an interoperable approach, not only was this less of a burden on farmers, but we could trust in the information. It could be triangulated across different systems, and that could also inform the models and the insights that we were looking to deliver to the partners. So we took a little different approach with this, and we were looking at not just a single software vendor or another app that somebody has to put on their phone, but rather, how do we bring the best and brightest minds from industry and business solution partners together to actually create a solution that helps farmers collect information that's meaningful and useful in the moment, but also provide the information that the USDA and our academic partners need to improve the models and provide the insights that they need for the program. So I know that's kind of a big brush approach, but I'm excited about it because the way that IFPA is approaching this is not a single solution, but rather working together through interoperable solutions with multiple providers to meet growers where they're at and to get that information into their right hands at the right time.
How are you handling it if you're working with a grower and they already do have systems of how they're collecting and analyzing data? Are you asking them to not use the systems that they have and move over to the system that we're going to impose on them? Or how are we doing that?
That's a great question. And of course, we have to stay focused on the requirements of the program and the outcomes, right? So we have very limited resources and time, and it's really important that we focus those resources in the right direction. And so the first thing we're starting is with an interoperable framework. So it's, let's use a common language. Let's all speak the same language so that at least we can plug those systems together if those systems that the farmer's already using is compatible. If they're compatible and conformant with the standard, great. If by chance those systems quite aren't up to standard yet, then the program is providing an application that the farmers can use so that there is a good chain of custody and good quality of data that we could use for the models and for reporting to the USDA. So meet them where they're at, but if they're not quite there yet, we'll give them a solution that can take them forward.
So is that going to require a lot of training, do you suspect?
you know, we have a great team. Like, that's the other thing I love about this program, is very focused on the growers. Like, we've got folks with boots on the ground that are out there getting dirty with the growers and showing them, you know, not just the practices and how to implement them, but how to connect with the tools that we're offering. So training is going to be minimal. We're really focusing on human-centered design, very streamlined forms, just-in-time information, trying to reduce data entry. If we do this well, then there's going to be very little training involved. But the cool thing about the program is we have those resources on the ground and just a phone call away to support as needed.
And then these will be systems that they can continue using. And I know this should be an upgrade, I would think, to the way that they're farming right now and the information that they're getting. I think that's a fair statement.
I think it is. I mean, I believe we have fantastic farm management information systems in the market today that are already delivering significant value to growers. They're using those to improve the yield and grade, reduce their input costs, be more efficient with labor, deal with compliance, you know, optimize water. These are all things growers do every day today. How do we introduce the opportunity for them to take that existing data that they're already using to power their business and now be able to access new benefits through the Climate Smart initiatives? And those can take on many different forms, but what they don't need to take on is another thing a grower has to do, another system they have to log into. So, you know, we really didn't want to pick winners here and say, oh, you've got to use this system or that system. You know, as an industry association, we really wanted to rise the tide for all. And enable those business solution providers and those existing technology partners, of which many of our members have great solutions. And we wanted them to be able to say, hey, we can conform to the standard and we could be open and interoperable. Let's plug in and go, rather than be prescriptive around another app that a farmer has to do.
So I know you're still doing some work on getting all the details of this, but you are working with a number of collaborators and a number of different systems and kind of bringing the best in class together, right?
Now, Vonnie, I told you we can't name names.
I know. I said, I know.
They're names everybody knows. We've got some bright minds and just wonderful companies that share this vision of interoperability. I mean, listen, the idea of siloed data and proprietary systems is gone away. We need to work together as an ecosystem of apps and data solution providers. And the folks that are at the table, they see that. They see that's the future of their business, and they're excited to collaborate with us. We also have some great academic and open source partners at the table and a number of other exciting partnerships that will unfold in the weeks to come. But yes, it's going to be cool to see these tech companies really run with this vision that Max and the team has put forward.
Well, Drew, let's also talk about the data sovereignty, because one of the conversations that we're having with the growers is, you know, it's great that you can do all these things with my data, but it's almost like you're taking this from me, you're taking this agency away from me. So what are you seeing as the best in class in terms of data sovereignty, and how does that factor into what we're doing?
Max, fantastic question. And, you know, I agree with that sentiment. I mean, there's a good reason people feel that way, because for years that's been the case. Companies stick themselves in the middle of the data conversation, and all of a sudden the people who actually create and generate that value often miss out on the value. And so we took a whole new approach with this, as you know, and we really modeled it based on work that IFPA has started years ago in food safety and compliance with their support of the Trellis Framework Initiative, which is a sovereign data API specification. Not to geek out on you too much, but basically it means that the person who creates the data or the value has full sovereignty over how that information is used, for what purpose, in which context, and what the business relationship is with respect to the return of value that they agree is appropriate. And all of that is governed up front with very clear and transparent rules. So at the end of the day, if you provide information into the program, you're doing so with the understanding of how the information is used, and you maintain ownership and rights to that data throughout the network. And maybe that's a conversation that we could get into another day around the data sovereignty and stewardship and some of the applications that enable it. But I think the important thing for this context is that There's no surprises. There's clear data sovereignty and privacy and use requirements. And we're also, you asked about best practices. I mean, best practices is openness and transparency about these rights, which enables us to not have to be as transparent or divulge all of the data. Like we can be clear about how the information can be used and how it cannot be used. We're leaning heavily on some of the previous works from the Open Ag Data Alliance, specifically around privacy and use components, and some emerging new standards, which are gaining a lot of traction with OpenTeam and their Ag Data Bill of Rights. So this puts the growers and the producers clearly in the driver's seat with the sovereignty of their data. I'm pretty excited about it.
So Max, we've signed up, what, over 80 growers? Is that right? Something like that, 80?
Fully signed up are 20 growers or so, and then we have a list, because there are a lot of paperwork requirements that we're going through. Like they need to have certain documents already on file with USDA. So 20 are fully signed up and already starting their practices, and 80 others are in various stages of being approved.
And what has the reaction been from growers? Are people, do they believe this is going to help them? I mean, how are they reacting?
So it's fascinating because the growers who come to us, many of them are have already thought about using these practices.
Mm.
They make sense. Cover cropping. Why wouldn't you cover crop if you live in a climate where you get rainfall when the ground is shallow? Obviously, you wouldn't do it in Yuma, right, in the middle of summer. But there are places where we grow where cover cropping makes sense. Application of compost and mulches also makes sense. Biochar. But some of these practices are not cheap. So just because people thought about it, they didn't try them because they're cost prohibitive and the ROI is sort of a question mark. And now we have this opportunity to say, look, we have this a little bit of an incentive and a partial reimbursement for, you know, the cost of the investment that you're going to make. Try it. See what works. You may find out that it works. You may find out that it doesn't. And this is a unique opportunity.
It's a four-year program, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you think will come out of the 4 years? What are we going to get at the end? And what is the USDA going to get where they say that was money well spent?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you that when I was first writing this grant, a lot of entities that represent row crops came to us and they said, why are you wasting your time, specialty crops? You know, the corn and the soybean and the wheat, we got it. You just don't have the acreage. You don't have, you know, you need to form beds. You disturb ground a lot. But what they don't have that specialty crops have is this direct, intimate relationship with consumers. Because when consumers buy cornflakes, they may think of a brand on the box. They don't think of the farmer that grew that corn for them.
Exactly.
When they buy strawberries, when they buy tomatoes, oftentimes there is, you know, a QR code that the consumer can scan and they can see the person who was, you know, raising that crop for them. Sometimes there is even, you know, a signature, you know, this was picked and packed for you by such and such person. So there is this intimate relationship between fresh produce and the consumers, and consumers want to know everything about the food that they eat. And it's very clear that they want to know about the carbon footprint, about the production practices. Consumers are not willing to pay extra for it, but they want to know. And they want to be responsible stewards of the earth through their dollars. So I think what we're about to experience in terms of shopping, consumers will still focus on quality, price, and nutritional, at least perceived nutritional properties, but they will also consider what else am I buying and what else am I investing in. And I think that's where specialty crops have a unique opportunity and unique relationship with those consumer.
That's a really good point. Is there anything in the program, or will there be future programs, do you think, on pulling that message through to consumers?
Yeah. And so part of what we're proposing is also develop off-the-shelf marketing kits for the growers. Obviously, we're not going to develop, you know, this blanket campaign, but we will then give growers a chance to plug and play. And especially, you know, with AI now being available, to develop really cool advertisements, you know, why not leverage both of these opportunities, AI, and also telling the story as individual growers market their climate smart commodities that were grown with so much love and different practices. So,
what's the retailer's role in this? Is there anything, given that we have retailers as members, is there anything we can do from a retail perspective to get signage up or labeling or something to kind of pull it through?
Yeah, great question. So if you ask the industry if we're ready for a climate smart label, I think the resounding answer is going to be no. Because there are 100 plus various certifications that are climate smart something. And there is no agreement on the practices that are considered. There is no definition of regenerative or climate smart production, for that matter, that everybody agreed on. So I think it's really premature to start developing certification programs that will be imposed on the growers. So, and you know, the work that Tamara is doing on trying to streamline some of those sustainability labeling requirements and sustainability, the proliferation of labeling certifications. So once we get them to a manageable number, or at least a common language, the interoperable certifications, to borrow Drew's term, that's when we can start educating retailers. You know, instead of growers certifying for retailer A and then retailer B, retailer C, retailer D, we can say, well, maybe retailer A, B, and C have requirements that are so overlapping that it makes sense for them to have a one audit scheme, for example. I think we're just at the beginning of this journey and the beginning of this conversation, especially if you look at how long it took for organic to become not just a curiosity item, but a thing that retailers depend on. We need to afford ourselves a little bit of patience.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Max. We need some time before we try to step in and create a new label or brand, which should just be confusing and honestly just add additional cost back to the growers. As you mentioned, they're already managing so many different certification programs and labels today. And so I think that when we, I think the question was about some of the benefit or the outcomes of this program. I'm really excited about what we're going to learn on the farm. We're really going to understand what are the true costs of these practices, not just the material, but the labor and the impact to greater yield or delay, the additional handling costs, the administrative costs. There's a lot packed into these practices that we're really going to understand. And if we as an industry can do a good job of collecting this information in a safe and sovereign fashion, using it to drive models that would be used to inform legislative or regulatory or incentive frameworks, that could be huge for our industry to really like have some just clear understanding of what the challenges and opportunities are here and debunk some of the myths that are maybe out there and prove some of the efficacies that we know there. We just need to have the science to back it up. So I think what we learn on the farm and how that informs future policies and incentives is going to be pretty exciting.
And one last thing I was going to add, Bonnie, Andrew, is that the data that we're collecting, so instead of a certification or a label or a sticker, growers can say, well, here's the data that I've collected. Here's the carbon sequester that is measured. Here's the water saved that is documented. So why not use that instead of another sticker?
Yeah, great point. Okay, I think we could keep talking about this for a long time. It's such an exciting program of just looking at bringing so much of the industry together. And I think we're at this great time right now with technology that in the past, it was always, we'll just measure yield. We'll try this thing and we'll measure yield. And it's like, well, this year it didn't rain or this year this happened. And so yield is really a bad measurement of inputs, especially when you're growing outside, because there's so many variables. And so what I love is we're at this point where we can measure everything. We can measure all these different practices and really figure out what are these practices giving us. And we might find that some of them don't give us anything, you know, or it may take 5 years to give us something. So I love that it's multi-year, but I think we're really at this amazing point in time where we can measure practices and then prove to both, you know, the grower and the retailer and the consumer and all the way down the line, you know, that these practices really have value to us. So I'm really excited that we're all involved. And any last things you want to say before we close off, either one of you?
Well, I think it's a unique opportunity that our industry will not have again. So this is the conversation that we have been propagating with other partners that received this funding, the $3 billion funding. And we are urging all of them, all of us, to work together on developing standards, both in terms of what these practices look like and also the data that we're collecting. Because, boy, we're going to do ourselves a disservice if we collect data that doesn't match and can't be compared. So I hope that we truly leverage this opportunity as an industry.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Okay. Well, thank you both very much. It's great to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bonnie.
That's it for today's episode of Fresh Takes on Tech. This material is based upon work supported by the U.S. Department of Agriculture under the Climate Smart Commodities Grant. The USDA is an equal opportunity provider, employer, and lender. See you next time.
Bayer supports fruit growing and horticulture growers with their wide range of offerings from seeds to crop protection products and digital solutions, empowering growers to produce healthy crops and high quality, abundant yields. You can learn more about their complete portfolio at cropscience.bayer.us.